Session number 10805, rule 1.
Mr. Brown, rule 1. How and when did you first join the Navy, please?
In May 1939.
And why did you join now?
Being, coming from an old naval family, I saw that the war was imminent. And I thought it was much better to get into the Navy and get a little training before the hostilities actually broke out.
Was it easy to get in?
Oh, yes. I went down one morning to the Chatham and went to a recruiting office there. And it was most amusing. I went in. There was quite a lot of people waiting to join the Navy. And we were asked what we wanted to do. Join as, and I mentioned I wanted to become an engineering artificer, and of course the Navy were on the lookout for engineers then, so the chief there was made me laugh, because he took a shilling out of his own pocket, told me to go and have some coffee and a bun and come back in 3/4 of an hour's time. By that time the queue had cleared, and I almost got red carpet treatment. And from there I went into Chatham Barracks and did a trade test, and then started disciplinary training.
Whereabouts?
In Chatham Barracks, Pembroke, HMS Pembroke.
Where were you when war was declared?
I was in the last year of my apprenticeship at Fraser's and Chalmers, Erith. They manufactured turbines, steam turbines, and mining equipment.
What did you think of the training that you got in the Navy?
All through the career, I took the opportunity to take all the courses I could. I think you should. I could recommend anyone to take all the courses in the services. They're marvellous. Very good. Very good foundation for civilian life afterwards.
In what way? The skills
there? Skills, yes, the skills you develop. I found that when I finally came out of the Navy, I had no difficulty in getting into a very well-known firm, American origin, Foster Wheeler, who at that time did a majority of the boilers for the Navy anyway.
Your first ship was HMS Protector, was it?
Yes.
Can you tell me about her?
she was one of two ships in the Navy who were fleet photography ships and net layers, harbour protection ships. Very well constructed ships. They were built around about 1936, I believe. Very strong ships. And I joined Protector in Malta, having taken a passage in a troop ship, which was the older liner Franconia, accompanied by the Alcantara and the Riano del Pacifica. We had quite an incident on the way out to Malta, in as much that the Franconia collided with the Alcantara about 4 o'clock in the afternoon in broad daylight. And
how do you think that happened?
I don't know. They just gracefully came together, and that was it. And when we got to Malta, we were drafted off to Franconia because she had been quite badly damaged. And we went on to the Riano del Pacifica until such times as we were drafted to the ships, the naval ships which we were destined to join.
Can you tell me what this role as a fleet photography ship involved?
I had little experience on the Protector of her duties as a fleet photography vessel, because this was a duty she performed apparently in peacetime. All the time I was aboard the Protector, we were concentrated on harbour protection, laying nets. But she had a lot of photography rooms on board to after the, in the after part of the ship. She was very well equipped for photography, though, as I say, we didn't, to my knowledge, we didn't carry out a lot of photography. I think it was, I think it was for spotting, you know, in peacetime practice for artillery, you know, the shells and so forth. I think that's what it was used for.
How was the netting carried out?
The nets were stored in the net holds, and also barrel the barrels for from which the nets were suspended, and when. And when we were actually net laying, these nets were brought up into the after part of the ship, and also the barrels in the barrel gangways. An anchor was dropped, and the ship steamed away from it. And these the anchor was then attached to the barrels and the nets. And as the ship proceeded away from the anchor, they were pulled out, and then barrels floated on the surface, and the nets were suspended down below, underneath them. And these provided protection from submarines. You could do about 3 miles at a run, at one run.
Was she a happy ship to be on?
Oh, yes. My first experience, it was a wonderful ship, my first experience as a seagoing ship, it was a marvellous ship. I had a very good captain. He was the Honourable Guy Herbert Russell. And I can always remember he made a great impression because he cleared, as war broke out, he cleared lower deck and said that there would be, everyone would experience difficulties during the war. And he said to the ship's company, if anyone had trouble at home and so forth, he would get his family's solicitors to help out if they could. Which of course created a great deal of confidence in the captain and the ship in general.
Where did you join the Protector?
In Malta, Grand Harbour.
And where did the Protector do her duties in the early part of the war?
Alexandria, and protected the harbour there. She then assisted all the way along the North African coast as the army advanced and also retreated. We also went out and laid the harbour defences of Freetown, West Africa. We had a rather an interesting incident while we were there. We were out one night on patrol, and the cruiser Neptune was also out on patrol there. And the Neptune was the flagship. And we spotted what we thought was the Neptune during the night. And being rather wary of flashing up the senior officer first, because it's not exactly the dumb thing to flash up the senior officer, we sort of waited and made sure that he wasn't going to flash us first, you know, let him flash us first and then reply immediately, as signalling we'd spotted him. We found out later on that this shadowy ship we'd seen during the night wasn't the Neptune after all, it was the Grav Spey. And I think it was very fortunate for us we didn't flash her up. It's one of those incidents do happen in war, though. But,
are there any other incidents that stick out in your mind from when you served on the Protector that you can recount?
Oh, yes, we went up to Norway for the Norway campaign. Had the usual funny incidents up there when you're in the fields of I'm being on the lookout for dive bombs all the time. There's various alarms up there which turned out to be gulls in the end. They started flapping their wings at the last minute. I can always remember as well a very funny incident. We took up the French Foreign Legion, and They were dressed in their Arctic dress, white coverings over their uniforms, and we just tied up alongside. And I always remember this: a young guard's lieutenant came along, and he called up to the officer of their first lieutenant, actually lieutenant commander, on the forecastle, and he said, "I say, would you mind moving your ship along 2 feet?" He got a very rude answer. I think that was very funny, though, with him, this young officer, glaring up at our 2.5 ring and ordering him to shift the ship 2 feet, just to bring it along in a certain position alongside. The other thing I can always remember is we were at Jervik. I can always remember the Warspite opening fire over the mountains to Narvik. Yeah. Pardon?
What did that look like?
Well, there wasn't a lot. You couldn't see anything because the Narvik was some way over the hill, over the mountains, from Jervik where we were. But it was very impressive, the bombardment that was carried out. The other interesting thing, the Protector was a very lucky ship right the way through. The time I was on her, on the way back, we passed the Glorious, and the three destroyers signalled them, and passed on their way. And half hour later, we heard that they'd met up with the Scharnhorst, I think it was, and the other one, Hipper, was it, or Knife now, and they all four of them were sunk. It was only half an hour previous to that we passed them. They wished us well, and we wished them well, of course.
Did you get any damage off Norway to the
Protector? No.
But you had dive bombing attacks, did you?
Oh, yes, but we weren't damaged.
And was the Protector doing, what kind of work was she doing there, the nettling?
No, she went up there. As I said, she was a marvellous ship for carrying stores and goods. So if they emptied out the net holes and the net troughs, you had capacity of taking troops and stores, you see. Also, she was a marvellous towing vessel, because she was a target towing vessel as well. After Norway, we went back to the Mediterranean, and from there on, we gave general support, as I say, going through the Suez, to and from Port Said to the Suez, with cargoes. We also took a load of torpedoes out to Piraeus in Crete, and from whilst we were out there, of course, we also helped in the evacuation from Crete, carrying the New Zealanders away.
What impression did they make?
What, the New Zealanders? Yeah. They were fine chaps. And of course, it was in one of these runs away from Crete that we got torpedoed. And that was just after the HMS York had been hit by torpedo boats in Suda Bay. As a matter of fact, we'd been sent to Suda Bay to tow the York out, and they were so near then to getting underway under their own steam that the captain, Portal, I think his brother was an air vice marshal, turned the offer down, because he said they were ready to steam themselves. But unfortunately, the torpedo boats got through and damaged a bit on repair before we could get to her, really. And so soon after that run out, that we got torpedoed ourselves.
Can you describe how the ship got torpedoed?
Three torpedo bombers came down and did a crisscross attack. So that no matter which way you turn, you ran into a torpedo, and one torpedo hit us right on the diesel room and engine room bulkhead. And again, we were very lucky; we only lost two people. One was our messman, actually, our stoker, and he was coming through the net troughs at the time, going to his action station, and the deck went up underneath him. And the other one was a seaman down in the net holds. And he wasn't actually killed by the explosion. He was killed by the fact that one of the big drums, the Netlane drums, fell and hit him on the head. And
where did this torpedo doing take place?
Just off of Crete. Just off of Crete.
Off Soderburg?
Well, we'd left Crete behind. We'd been underway about 6 hours, I suppose, from Crete, when we were hit.
Do you remember the date of it, approximately?
Not really, not now.
Would it have been May 1941?
It would have been just about the period of the evacuation from Crete, because we'd bought some New Zealanders away from there.
Was it a daylight attack?
Yes, daylight attack.
Do you remember what time of day?
I should say about 4 o'clock. About 4 o'clock in the afternoon, I suppose.
Were you down below?
No, I wasn't on watch at the time because. This rather funny incident. I'd gone to my action station, which is after end of the ship, magazine flooding, you see. And my friend, Jerry German, he'd gone to the bridge to draw the magazine keys. And he was coming aft towards me, shutting the water diet doors as he came going aft, whilst I'd gone aft and was shutting the water diet doors going forward. And as he was shutting one door, I was shutting another, the deck went up in front of it. You know, explosion and the flooding. And we shut the water diet doors, but the funny thing about Jerry, my friend, he'd got the magazine keys in his left hand, and he had all his clothes blown off him, except for his socks and his he had his socks and his shoes on, and all his clothes were blown off, but his helmet was blown off with such force, his steel helmet was blown off with such force that it had damaged it. Yet the blast hadn't affected him at all.
How frightening was this torpedo attack?
Not really. It was one of those things, you know, one of those incidents, that's all.
What kind of speed would the ship be doing at the time?
I suppose about 16 knots, something like that. She wasn't a fast ship.
Were you with any other ship?
No, on her own. And we were towed in, because it hit us right in the engine room.
Did you have troops on board?
Let me think now, I can't recall accurately at the moment whether we had any troops on board on that occasion. I don't think we had on that occasion. No, I think we'd been to pick up, our primary duty on that run, I think, was to tow the York out. And as we were unable to do it, I think, so her damage, I think we were running back to Alexandria empty. We were on our way back to Alexandria then.
Was it after that that you left the Protector?
No. We were towed back to Alex. From there on, we were towed from Alexandria through the Suez by a merchant ship at about 3 knots, I think. Very slow ship as far as Aden. We stayed at Aden for a few months. Then another merchant ship picked us up and towed us out to Bombay. And from then we stayed in Bombay for about 9 months, waiting for spare engines to arrive from England. I understand that some of these spares were sunk on the way out, and they ultimately decided then to transfer the ship home back to England, transfer the ship's company back to England. And on arriving back in England, I had my foreign service leave, and then I received a draft to Glasgow, Fairfield Shipyards, to stand by the woodcock.
What did that involve?
Oh, that meant I was up there for about two or three months or more whilst they were building the ship.
Did you have any duties?
Oh, with the engineer officer up there supervising the building and installation of the machinery.
Did any problems occur?
No, it went very smoothly.
Can you tell me about joining her when she was completed?
We'd already joined her, of course, right from the start. I mean, there was only about three or four people up there, and it was just until we just stood by the ship until the she was finished and the whole ship's crew arrived and she was commissioned. And from there on, we went up onto the Western Isles, where we did the working up periods under the what was his name, Commodore. He was on the Valente, the Sopwith's old yacht. What was his name? Stevenson, Commodore Stevenson, who did all the working up of the ship's crews before going on to the North Atlantic and Western Approaches, you see.
Now, can you tell me what kind of a ship Woodcock was?
It's a Black Swan type frigate, Black Swan type sloop.
Can you describe her? What would you be armed with, mainly? Depth charges?
Depth charges, yes. Main equipment was depth charges, of course. She had 4.7-inch guns, twin mountings. And she also, that the Woodcock was one of the first ships fitted with radar-controlled Bofa guns.
How did the crew compare with the Protector? The kind of people and their backgrounds, and how well you got on with them?
Again, very, very, very little difference. Mixed crew, mixed background, hostilities only, and regular service. But again, a very happy ship. I was lucky right the way through my service. I never had a duff ship, and marvellous officers and crew right the way through my service career.
Now, Captain Walker made a great reputation in the war as a submarine hunter.
Yes.
Can you tell me about him and the unit that he commanded, that you were part of?
The 2nd Escort Group were usually was composed of about six ships. Normally, four would go to sea on a patrol, escorting convoys. And two would usually be under in harbour, undergoing repairs and boiler clean, because Captain Walker was famous for his depth charge attacks, and he normally used to use two ships during the patrol to do the main depth charging, because he carried out depth charging in a very slow speed, sometimes a little more than about 2 knots. Sit right over the submarine and drop his depth charges. And this used to just shake the ships. Very effective attack, mind you, but it used to shake the ships up. At the end of a month's patrol, the two ships that had been used mainly for the depth charging normally had to go in for repairs, you see. And this type of ship also was found to be too lightly constructed, that in time each ship went in and had its deck strengthened, the upper deck strengthened, because they tended to crack across the across the after part, across the depth charge deck. It used to crack right across. And the other thing, of course, is the method of, or the theory behind Captain Walker's attacks, was the fact you hardly ever saw your convoy you were with. You were always miles ahead, about 60 miles ahead of the convoy, because his theory was the fact that if you could keep the way ahead clear of U-boats, they couldn't get into position to do an attack. And the genius of Captain Walker, of course, was reading the reports of where submarines have been spotted, and he always used to mind read the U-boat captain's thoughts. And you could almost bet your boots that within a day or so of having a report of the whereabouts of submarines, he'd bring the second escort group above them. You know, phenomenal, his interpretation of the minds of the U-boat captains. Mind you, he was assisted by the fact that the whole point of the U-boat captain was to get to a convoy. So he more or less, from the time he got the bearings of where the submarines were, he was assisted, of course, by knowing that they'd had to attack the convoy, and to get to that position, they'd have to take certain routes, wouldn't they? But with the wide area of square miles of ocean open to them, of course, it was still a work of art to get anywhere near the positions of the submarines. But it was his interpretation of the actions of the submarine commanders which was phenomenal, really.
Which ship was he based on?
He started off with the Stork, but by the time the Woodcock joined his flotilla, the Stork had been damaged, and he took over the sister ship of the Woodcock, actually, the Starlin, and she left Glasgow just a few months ahead of the Woodcock. She was the ship prior to the Woodcock at Fairfield Yard.
Did you meet Walker?
Personally, no. Only at a distance. I've never been personally in this company.
How was he regarded by the crews of the flotilla?
Oh, very highly. Very highly. Magnificent commander. In fact, matter of fact, is I think the greatest epitaph to the Captain Walker is the association which has been formed in honour of his name, Captain Walker's Old Boys Association. And I think I'm correct in saying it's the only association which is a service association which is named after a man. And of course, in Bootle, where the